Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello and welcome to today's edition of Bodcast. My name is Nigel Jones. I'm Sales and Marketing Director at Practice Plan. And today we're going to be exploring the English contract reform program for the dental contract in the company of Joe Hendren, who's a practicing dentist in Wakefield. Welcome, Joe. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
I wonder if you wouldn't mind just starting by introducing yourself and giving us a bit of an insight into your background.
Sure. I graduated from the University of Leeds in 1988 and came to Wakefield following a short term in Bradford doing vocational training, and took a practice over two surgery practice over in 1989. We've gradually built that up to a 9 surgery NHS practice with an orthodontic department in it associated as well. So it's been a long path.
Okay, and you've been involved in the contract reform program for quite a few years.
Yes, we started in June 2013. We were supposed to start in April, but like all things NHS and Department of Health, there were a little bit of delay. So we start June 2013 as a pilot practice.
Yeah. And what attracted you to getting involved in the contract reform programme?
Well, since 2006 and the introduction of the UDA, we felt that really was not a fair way to either deliver treatment to our patients or be rewarded for the treatment that we provide from early on in since 2006. It'd been recognised that the UDA was not a suitable way to provide dental care, and so Jimmy Steele, I was told, was doing this investigation. He came up with his report in 2010 that would provide an alternative way to provide a much more preventative driven contract, which really would suit the patient for the 21st century.
So it was the opportunity to get involved and help shape and create that more prevention approach or preventive approach?
It is, yes. It was suggested that patients start to take responsibility for their care. Advanced treatment would be able to be provided to those patients where advanced treatment was appropriate, rather than following a target-led system which the UDA had, which maybe coloured dentists' views as to what treatments should be appropriate if they're chasing a target rather than caring for the patient.
And so you were involved as one of the pilots initially, and then you've moved on to be one of the practices testing the prototype contracts. How have you found the experience?
Under the pilot, we found that the system was working. Initially, it took a long time to get the oral health assessments out because it was all driven by the computer, and it took maybe half an hour, 40 minutes per patient initially to get them onto the pathway. We found that the patients were, on the whole, more accepting that we were taking more time over them. They were interested to know where extra work needed to be done in their periodontal treatment, or the fact that we were taking time to do more diet analysis, which we'd never done under fee per item or UDA contract, and be able to use the developed skill mix in the practice so that we could have the care delivered by therapists that we had or the dentist as appropriate. And we were able to provide the care that we were trained to do back in university time, which the NHS has always failed to be able to provide that situation for.
Yeah, I've heard that from a few people involved in the pilots, that actually the introduction of the pathway and with it the oral health assessment was actually a very positive step forward, and the experience for everyone involved in the pilots was generally a good one.
It was, yes. You know, we would have patients who come in. You get your 50-year-old man coming in. He's got lower incisors that are wobbling in the wind. He's covered in plaque. He smokes 20, 30 a day. And he says, why have my teeth loose? He says, because you smoke 20, 30 a day and you don't brush your teeth. We can sort this out if you go and see the therapist. I'm not bothered about that. I'll see you in 6 months. And off he goes. And you see them again 6 months later. And it's the same old story each time. When he came in for an oral health assessment, and you give him a piece of paper with the red, amber, green, and he's red in his periodontal health, he's wondering, he's kind of looking and says, why am I red? You know, he says, because you don't brush your teeth, you smoke 20 or 30 a day, and you haven't seen the therapist. Who's this therapist, he would say. And then very quickly, the therapist book, which was originally, we'd just taken a therapist on just prior to the pilot, her book was pretty much empty. They became fully booked within a matter of 3 or 4 months of embarking on the pilot. So the uptake of periodontal treatment really flew through the roof. And we were starting to see great changes, great improvements. The number of people that we were able to stop smoking on the back of this was remarkable. The number of people that were reducing their alcohol because we were now engaging with people and having that conversation, which previously we didn't necessarily have time because we were chasing UDAs. The results that we were getting were, as I say, remarkable. But unfortunately, they weren't pinpointing the number of patients that were stopping smoking. They weren't necessarily measuring accurately the improvement in kind of quality of care that we were delivering when we were given this prevention advice. And unfortunately, the Department of Health and Contract Reform Programme saw our activity go through the floor. That was multifactorial. Part of that was because of the length of time that it takes to do an oral health assessment and formulate a treatment plan, which had to be really done on the first day. They decided, well, you're not doing enough fillings and extractions and dentures. We were doing what we could to put fires out, but we weren't electing to do it because there was no target base that we had to go and maintain a certain level of activity. We did the activity, we did the fillings and the treatment that was actually necessary. So they decided to introduce the prototype, and the prototype, of course, brought back the UDA, albeit with a 20% reduction for the blend day. We were a blend day practice with a 20% reduction in UDA targets, which supposedly was to allow us for time for prevention. But unfortunately, with all the time that was spent doing these oral health assessments, our access levels went down. So we had to start taking on new patients. And it was a combination of the two targets that we then had, the UDA and maintaining an access, that started to make things really intolerable. And the more activity we were doing and the more new patients that we had to see, left less and less time for prevention. We weren't, you know, we needed another surgery to take we had a spare surgery, sorry, where we took an additional dentist on at the end of 2016. And so that meant we couldn't use that surgery to provide fluoride varnish treatments. We've nurses trained up to provide fluoride varnish for children. We weren't able to do that because we needed to see more patients. And that then became an added cost and an added burden to as a direct result of moving from pilot to prototype.
So Joe, many practices around the country will know of you because of the open letter that you wrote withdrawing from the contract reform programme. What were the reasons behind that decision, and how difficult a decision was it?
Well, really, the stresses within the practice become intolerable. From myself through the practice manager right down to the decontamination nurse, because of our trying to accommodate the increasing number of patients we were expecting to see, provide the care and treatment in a timely manner and to a quality that was appropriate. And the other reason was the increasing cost that we were incurring in order to meet these commitments. We were told at the outset of the pilot that we wouldn't be any worse off had we stayed within the UDA system, but we had to take on an additional dentist for 3 days a week in order to make the patient at the access target. And that has cost us from our bottom line over £50,000 per year, and that has been going on for the last 18 months, and that became really the big crux. Can we maintain this? The major pressure as well, doing the UDAs was relatively straightforward. Maintaining the patient access was the biggest issue. Last, in the September before I left the practice, I sat down with the practice manager and we discussed what we needed to do before the end of March in order to make the targets. We said we had approximately 450 new patients to find space for in our already crammed books. And she turned around to me and said, "Joe, I can't do this anymore. I've had enough." And she left in December. So, you know, do we lose a practice manager or do we lose a dentist through the stress? And I said, this cannot go on. And the reason I wrote my letter is that I wanted everybody else to know, because we've said in evaluation meetings with the contract reform people and the Department of Health, we've expressed our, you know, heartfelt desire to carry on and make this work, but they do not recognise what it's actually costing us. And I'm not the only practice. There are practices all across the area doing prototypes who have had to put extra money in and extra timing in. We were calculated to have a certain number of hours at the outset of the pilot to be able to provide NHS treatment. By the end of the prototype, we were providing 22% more hours than we were actually contracted to do, and we had no additional funding for that. The patients' numbers were the big issue. From we had a big drop off during the pilot as we were doing all the oral health assessments, but by year three we were starting to get that up to the level that we should be, so that by the March, at the end of the pilot, 2016, the 31st of March, we were 154 patients short our target, which was as close as we could be, and we suffered £2,000 clawback as opposed to £14,000 in the previous 2 years. That was the 31st of March. They then changed the rules, which the prototype rules took out all of the patients that we'd seen as occasional patients. And so that in turn reduced our target, but it also reduced the number of patients that we had on our books. So when I said on the 31st of March, we had a target of 154 patients to get, on the 1st of April, that became 505. So the increasing the access by stealth was another one of the issues that I had major problems with the Department of Health and with the contract reform program, that they were really selling us a dud with this contract reform program. It's not about prevention, it's about increasing access.
I mean, listening to you, Joe, you can tell that must have taken quite a toll on you all here. I mean, the example of your practice manager. And that must be particularly hard because I know from everything I've read about you that you are completely committed to trying to find an NHS contract that does work for everyone, for government, for the profession and for patients. But what you're describing, it sounds like anyone that's thinking about joining the contract reform programme needs to think really carefully about their ability to configure themselves in a way that could give them even a chance of making it work. I mean, a 22% uplift in patient numbers, that's a real...
Clinical time available.
Yeah.
We've increased that by 22% by taking this additional dentist on.
And I guess you had the space to allow that to happen?
We did, because we've got the orthodontic practice, they had one or two surgeries available, so we were actually using more surgeries than the practice had at the outset of the pilot. So it was as if we had to do an expansion that into space that we already had. And as I say, that was not taken into account at the outset.
And you get the impression that here's a practice that are completely committed to trying to make it work, who actually have more flexibility than a lot of other practices would do in terms of reconfiguring themselves, and yet you really struggled. So it makes you wonder how other practices would be able to.
Well, exactly. People say, why did I do it? Why did I put this extra funding in? I said, I wanted to make it work and I wanted to achieve the target, but I also, when I achieve those targets, I want to let it be known at what the cost was. And the cost was not just a financial one, it was a personal one. Our practice manager had been with us for 27, 28 years. She had another 5 or 6 years to go before retirement. She didn't have to go. But for these practices coming in, I don't want to deter them. I want them to go in with their eyes open. And I want them to go in for the right reasons. Are you going in to try to make a change? Or are you going in for an easy life? If you're going in for an easier life, this isn't ready for you yet.
So where do you think the reform program should go to from here?
Well, before I put my resignation letter in, I wrote to Helen MacCampbell on the 23rd of October, and I asked her, had they any plans to improve or alter the process? They've been talking about taking on these additional 20 practices in the wave 4, but is there going to be any concrete changes that would hopefully change my mind and ease the pressure and allow me to make the decision that we can stay on longer and see if we can make this work? I've yet to hear from her. The resignation went in, explaining fully why I'm leaving, explaining that we are committed to contract reform. Our patients need it. The drill and fill contract of the 60s and 70s should be really a thing of the past. Yes, we've got the heavy metal generation to look after for the next 20 years or so, but we've also got to get away from this idea that we treat people. We should be preventing the disease before it starts. And if we can do that, then surely we can improve the lives of our patients.
Well, thank you very much, Joe. I think that's a good moment and a good thought on which to end this this podcast. I really appreciate your time and being so open and honest about your experiences. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.